This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Ball Factory, a Japanese eatery and coffee shop at 95 Montrose Avenue in East Williamsburg. Learn more at brooklynballfactory.com.
Time for Lunch is a new podcast from HRN for curious young eaters, where we focus on the serious questions.
Aren't chickens tiny dinosaurs?
We get to know our favorite foods in unexpected ways.
We just like cheered like you would cheer for your classmate when they're rounding second base in softball. And we just like, peach, 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 peach. Yay, thank you, peaches.
Learn some new recipes and jokes.
What does a boxer's mom put in his lunch? A knuckle sandwich.
And load up on fun facts.
Experts estimate that there are between 1 and 2,000 types of insects eaten around the world.
So roll up your sleeves and dig in. Subscribe to Time for Lunch on your favorite podcast app so that you and your favorite young eater can catch up on the whole first season. New episodes of season 2 out each week.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. I hope everybody is safe and well. We normally broadcast live from our studio at Werther's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, but our studio is currently closed due to the coronavirus outbreak. So we are recording this episode remotely from my apartment in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every daily supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is too mystery for many people, so I try to demystify this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Elizabeth Ando, who already joined us 8 times on episode 18, 61, 83, 99, 108, 131, 156, 180, and shared her truly deep insight into traditional Japanese food culture. And Elizabeth is a food writer and a Japanese cooking instructor based in Tokyo, and she has lived in Japan for over 50 years. And she runs a culinary art program called A Taste of Culture, which offers a great opportunity for non-Japanese people to explore Japanese culture through its food. And Elizabeth is also the author of 6 cookbooks, including the award-winning Washoku, Recipes from the Japanese Kitchen, and Kibo, Recipes and Stories from Japan's Tohoku, and Kansha, Celebrating Japan's Vegan and Vegetarian Traditions. And today's topic is donburi. Donburi is one of the most popular comfort foods in Japan, and it is as popular as ramen in Japan, but it's not well-known outside of the country. So today we'll discuss what donburi is, why it's so popular in Japan, what flavor variations it has, and how to make donburi at home, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write to a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japaneats@theheritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. And in fact, today's topic was requested by one of our listeners. So let's start a conversation with Elizabeth Ando. Hello, Elizabeth. Welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here, or rather here in Tokyo and still able to talk to you there in Brooklyn.
And thank you so much for staying up so late. It's 11 at night in Tokyo.
Yeah, not all that late for me, but I'm delighted that technology enables this to happen. Thanks so much.
Thank you. So how have you been?
It's been a strange few months, that's for sure. Delighted that Heritage Network has continued and that Japan Eats continues to record, and there's lots of things to listen to.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a weird feeling, but I think media is playing a big role, good or bad, so we try to be a good part.
Hope so.
So let's talk about donburi.
But what is donburi?
Well, donburi, the word really refers to two things. It's the food, something usually cooked food on top of already cooked rice. And it's also the word for the bowl in which that food is served. Depending upon how you decide to use the Roman alphabet to write the word in Japanese, sometimes it's D-O-N-B-U-R-I and sometimes it's D-O-M-B-U-R-I. It's the same word.
Right. That's always a tricky part, but yes. Donburi.
Right. Yeah.
So basically it's a combination of rice and a topping. Like whatever it can be,
right?
And I really want to stress that it's important to understand that Japanese are obsessed with the quality of the rice itself, even without any toppings, right? So, for example, a perfect bowl of rice comes at the end of a very fancy kaiseki dinner, and the Japanese rice is a short grain japonica, which is very luscious and sticky, whereas the long grain indica rice that you find in Southeast Asia is drier and absorbs the sauce that's served with it. So the japonica rice is in donburi is not just a supporting actor. It's an equal partner of the toppings.
No, very, very much so. The rice is important. The topping is nice and it changes and there's variety from it, but the rice is very important.
Right. It's almost like for pasta, you know, that's the equivalent to pasta of Italian people and rice for Japanese.
I think so, indeed. And the idea of putting something on top of rice, well, normally the Japanese like their rice plain, pure, white, and you don't put things easily on top of it. You don't want to soil the rice. But the notion of putting something already cooked on top of rice, clearly it was something convenient to do. People had food, maybe only one serving bowl in which to eat it from. That idea is not particularly new, but the form of donburi and calling it a donburi is only a couple of hundred years old.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the donburi. But before we get there, why do you think donburi is so popular in Japan?
Certainly today, because it's so easy to assemble, it's frugal, meaning you can use leftovers or bits and pieces of other things and put it on top. And I think also because it doesn't require any special skill. There are many comfort foods in the Japanese kitchen, but usually you need an obachan to make it for you. The current
obachan is grandmother.
Grandmother, right? The current younger generation is not necessarily skilled in the kitchen, but being able to put something that is already cooked on top of rice that comes out of your rice cooker is not a particularly difficult thing to do. And I think that there are many households in Japan today that eat donburi regularly just because of that.
Right. So, listeners, it's easy. It's for everybody, regardless of skill levels.
Right.
All right. So what is the history of donburi?
Well, as with so many things, there are so many different stories behind it. The name of donburi is often thought to be a contraction of two words. The name of of a restaurant that first served it that way, called Kendonya, and the container in which they served it was a budibachi. And so don and budi got together and became donburi. That's one version of it. Another is that it sounds like something, it looks like the character with the calligraphy with which it's written. I think what's really important is that by the Edo period, by the 17th century certainly, it was a pretty established way of putting a meal together. And it became popular, probably ten don, putting cooked tempura on top of rice was the first to be officially appearing on any kind of a menu. There's a menu from 1875 in a place called Nakano, a Tokyo shop, in which they're serving tendon. And that's probably the first document that uses that those words and describes that food as such, but it was probably around about 100, 200 years before that.
Right. So I looked up and then I found there is a I found an organization called Zenkoku Donrenmei, or All Japan Donbu Union, and which is not a trade organization, but an association created by fans of donburi in Japan.
Right.
The website is super enthusiastic and pretty funny. But so, well, it's that them and the other sources said the original, the original was around the 15th century.
Yes.
And then the first dish was, it's like a basic mixture of rice and vegetables and dashi on rice.
Right.
So, yeah, that's probably the original form. And so one thing I found is that during the Edo period, which was from the 17th to 19th century, donburi became widely popular.
Right.
And Edo is the old name of Tokyo. And Edo citizens were similar to, I would say, New Yorkers. And like we have a New York minute, they had an Edo minute. So they wanted to eat good food fast, and that's how sushi was born also.
Yeah.
And so with the same mindset, they popularized the quick and easy donburi dishes. So two dishes in one, rice and toppings. So that's what I learned.
And also not terribly expensive. I mean, it's not this, because it doesn't require terribly skilled labor, and it doesn't have to use, you know, top ingredients. It didn't have to be expensive. And I think that that was probably another factor in the popularization of donburi.
Right. Yeah. So can be any price. You can put some, you know, ikura, which is a summer roll. That's not cheap. Or you can, if you want, you can go for a modern version like caviar or something.
Right. Well, certainly today, they it comes in all price ranges. But I think the original idea that it was quick, easy, and didn't have to be costly was probably part of the assumption about people when they were thinking to eat donburi. They weren't thinking about spending a lot of money on that.
Right. Okay, so for listeners who have no idea what it looks like, so let's talk about some classic donburi dishes. And I have a list of some of the most popular donburi dishes, so we can go through it if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
Yep. So first of all, I think gyudon is very important. What is gyudon?
Gyu is beef, and it is a beef dish on top of rice. And probably in order to talk about gyudon, you need to talk about gyunabe, which is better known as sukiyaki. The first shop to really offer that was in Yokohama. Yokohama was a community, certainly with the largest foreign population and beef eaters. And
That's where the first port that was opened to outside Japan. So there's many foreigners arrived in Yokohama.
Right. Again, the first sort of document that has anything resembling a menu offering gyudon was in Yokohama in 1862, but it probably was around before that time. But It certainly, the idea, the notion of eating beef was unheard of in Japan before really the Edo period. People would never have thought of eating beef.
Right. And they found it so delicious. So
they did indeed.
Right. And then also the beef became a symbolic food to represent modernization of Japan, because everything samurai system was gone, and every so in and cool, people started to eat Western food, including beef. So,
And a chain operations are the equivalent of what today we would call a chain operation, where a single entity created more than one shop. That also was probably a reason for the growth in popularity of many of the donburi. In other words, there were many establishments that realized that they needed to open more than one location and offer similar, if not the same, food in many places. And Yoshinoya was the first to offer beef. And that, again, the year that was given was 1899 on the Yoshinoya website as their very first gyudon on the menu. And when you stop to think about it, that's really a long time ago.
Right, yeah. And yeah, so the Yoshinoya is, you know, you said it's one of those chain restaurants. They have Yoshinoya USA, and they have, right. I think, over 2,000 restaurants globally. I think 800 or something outside of Japan. So it really shows how gyudon has a global appeal.
Indeed.
All right. So what is tendon?
The ten comes from tempura and the don from donburi. And so you're putting tempura on top of rice. And today the two best known are a place called Hageten and Tenichi. And Hageten is sort of interesting. It opened in Kudan, sort of a downtown area of Tokyo, in 1928. The first owner, Mr. Watanabe, was bald. And being bald in Japanese is hage atama. And his customers used to call him hage. And Mr. Hage's tenbura was very good, so the name Hage Ten, and he decided to call his shop by that name. and it's still called Hage Ten, although I don't believe Mr. Watanabe is still with us. And the other is Tenichi, and Tenichi from the very start, again, their website says they opened in 1930, had a very exclusive image. They aimed to be in the shishi hotels, in department store restaurants. Many department stores not only have food halls, but they also have a floor devoted to restaurants. And it has a very sort of high-class, exclusive image in Japan. It sounds a little strange perhaps to people who have not been here or lived here. But from the very start, Tenichi aimed at that very exclusive image rather than humble, you know, home fare.
So interesting. So the gyudon and tendon we've talked about so far, the little chain restaurants really kind of dominate the market, although many independent restaurants serve it. So listeners, if you go to Japan, you can look for that kind of chain restaurants, or just go to one of those nice, comfortable restaurants. Then you can eat those things.
I would say pretty much any casual eatery in Japan is going to offer some kind of donburi.
That's true.
Yeah, it's usually on the menu.
And I just want to add one thing about tendon. Right. So commonly the sauce, which is typically made with dashi, soy sauce, mirin, sugar, and commonly the sauce is poured over tempura, which is, you know, the rice and topped with tempura, and then sauce is commonly poured over. But in the traditional Edo style, tempura is quickly dipped in the hot sauce to make it juicier. So that's like a little regional variation. It's little tiny things, but Edo people try to say we are different. So that's one of those things.
Doesn't surprise me. They still claim their difference today.
Like New Yorkers, I guess.
Right.
So the next one, that's oyakodon. What is oyakodon? Right.
Well, oyakodon is another version of which came first, the chicken or the egg, because it's a chicken omelet. And it's interesting because that's the one donburi perhaps that requires something special. It's possible to make it in an ordinary skillet, and you don't have to be terribly skilled at it, but there is a separate nabe, a separate pan that's used for making oyako don, and it looks almost like a ladle with a hand coming straight up and down, and it's a very shallow skillet, and the chicken and onions are cooked in seasoned dashi, and then egg is poured over it. The Japanese typically like their egg very loose, barely cooked, and sort of swished around and then put on top of the rice. As I said, it's possible to make it with an ordinary small skillet in which you would make a sunny-side-up egg, for example. But the Japanese do have a very special pan that they also use to make that. And there's one shop, particularly in Tokyo, that prides itself on oyako don called Tamahide. They're still in existence. The original, they claim that they were the first to offer oyako don on their menu, and the year was 1891. I don't know, in Japan, claiming ganso, being the original of something, is really a big deal. And many restaurants will vie over the ability to claim that they were the first. I wonder, do American restaurants get so excited or heated up about who got there first?
I don't think so, because I think the origin of history is not the focus in American culture in terms right. of like food and more creativity. So
probably, yeah. But yeah. in Japan, the origin and being able to claim that you were the first one to do it is a really big deal.
Right.
And Tamahide, which is still in existence in Ningyo-cho, claims that they were ganso for oyako don. Probably. I mean, certainly in terms of offering it on a menu, but I'm quite sure that many households that had eggs and chicken probably did it before it was officially called oyako don. But the name is sort of cute because the chicken and the egg, and oya is the parent and ko is the child. So it's the parent and child, and whether you want to decide that the chicken is the parent and the egg is the child, or the other way around, is sort of right. up to you.
And one thing, there's another thing. The tanin yeah. don is another donburi. The tanin is the right. strangers. So right. if it's not instead of a chicken and an egg, it's a beef or a pork and egg. So the right. stranger's combination.
Yeah. So yeah. The Japanese thing. Have a lot of fun with wordplay. With the naming of certain dishes. You know, people tend to think of the Japanese as very serious. The food culture is very serious, and but there's really a lot of playfulness to it and a lot of fun, and certainly in the names and the stories behind them. There's always a smile on my face when I'm talking about it.
Right. okay, so the next one, I think this is going to be very popular in the States. Katsudon. Right. What is katsudon?
Well, so the katsu refers to tonkatsu, and the ton is pork, and the katsu was originally probably the word cutlet, katsuretsu, and that became, so breaded fried pork. Typically it's sliced because it's eaten with chopsticks, and so you don't have knife and fork in order to cut it up, and served with a tonkatsu sauce, a sort of slightly sweet, slightly spicy, aromatic Worcestershire-like sauce. Katsudon is where you take that and put it on top of rice, and then you pour the sauce on top. It's interesting. There was also an interesting website run by a Waseda University graduate who was talking a bit nostalgically about katsudon and the fact that the store, the shop that claims Ganso to be the original of serving katsudon is a soba shop, actually, near Waseda University in Tokyo. The year given for opening was 1913, and when I followed a link on their site, I realized that they closed in July of 2018, so it has nothing to do with the coronavirus per se. But a little over 100 years they were in business, but they are no longer. Sanchoan was the name of the place. But katsu, because of a pun on the word, meaning it sounds the same, but it's written differently, is a pun on the word for winning. And so when people would win something, they would often celebrate with katsudon. And after difficult examinations at the university, people would go and celebrate and have their katsudon katana, meaning they had won their prize.
Before they do, to just try to pray and eat and then make a good luck.
So, right. Well, I think, I think they wanted the nourishment in order to give them strength to take the exam, right. But certainly afterwards as well, they went to celebrate. Whether katsudon really began with this small soba shop near Waseda University, there are other places that claim that they got there first, but certainly they were the best known shop to offer katsudon. Now it's popular and it's all over, and many shops.
So, well, the katsu, you know, you said origin is cutlet, and then Japanese cutlet, by the way, is very different because it's the same sliced meat, breaded and served either grilled or fried, but the Japanese cutlet uses larger piece of bread. That's based on Japanese style bread, which is white and fluffy. So it's like a bigger pieces and makes it crunchier, in my opinion. And that's like when you bite into it, that's the beauty of Japanese tonkatsu. So,
right. The panko, the panko in Japan, the breadcrumbs that are used are really, they look almost like shards of broken glass rather than they've got these points to them. And it really does make all the difference between crunch, but also a satisfying coating, so that the juiciness of the meat does not get lost when it's being fried. In other words, it's an excellent coating. It protects the inside, but it's also wonderfully crunchy. So you get these layers of texture and flavor at the same time. Also, I think katsudon, it depends upon the store, perhaps the restaurant, but the cut of pork is sometimes different, and that can change the experience as well. Most places will have a loin that has a little rim of fat on one end of it. Others will have the equivalent of the roast that has the piece of fat on the side, and then the loin, which is the longer, absolutely without any fat, very lean piece. And that will change the experience of the katsudon as well.
And I want to mention, you mentioned, you know, the tonkatsu sauce, which I think is really symbolic, one of the symbolic tastes of Japan. It's kind of Western style, but it's based on Worcestershire sauce, but then it's thickened based on vinegar, fruits, vegetables, and spices, I think. And if you go to Japanese retail shop, like their Japanese tonkatsu sauce, it's a must item, as important as soy sauce. And then you can pour it over anything you want. So, this tonkatsu sauce is really interesting. And of course, it's used for katsudon.
Right. And there are certain restaurants that really prize themselves on their sauce. Most have a rather fruity taste to it, and indeed fruit is one of the ingredients that's been cooked into it. In and around Nagoya, however, there's a miso sauce, and it's hacho miso. And there are those people who love it and those who don't. It's really a very different kind of taste from the ordinary tonkatsu sauce. Have you ever been to Nagoya and had the hacho miso sauce on tonkatsu?
No, I have not. It's like about the, because hacho miso is based on only soybeans without any rice or anything else. So that means that it's very dense, I think.
It is dense. It reminds me a little bit of hoisin sauce, Chinese hoisin sauce. It's more like that, I think, than ordinary what people think of when they think of a miso sauce. But in Nagoya, tonkatsu means hacho miso. And it's really, I don't know, everybody should go and try it once.
Right. Well, Nagoya has a very special food culture. Like they have their, morning, breakfast, of everything. So yeah, maybe I should do an episode on Nagoya food culture at some point.
Okay.
Right. So there are many other variations of donburi, such as, of course, kaisen don, which is rice topped with a variety of fresh seafood, or tekkadon, which is rice topped with tuna sashimi. And then you can find them in sushi restaurants. And it's very interesting that many of the classic donburi dishes reflect the history of Japan. Like, tendon would not have been born without the Portuguese, who came to Japan in the 16th century and inspired the Japanese to invent tempura. And the gyudon was born after Japan opened the country to the world, like we discussed. So tempura, I mean, the donburi is just a simple, casual dish, but it's packed with the history. So I really think it's important to know.
Right.
Anyways, so one of the biggest charms of donburi is that there's a great variety, and there are many regional versions of donburi, and that reflects the bounty of the area. So maybe you can give us some examples of regional donburi dishes.
Okay. Just backing up a little bit, I think that, you know, when people sometimes ask you to describe what's really significant about Japanese food culture, and I usually use two words, seasonal and regional. And I think they're sort of both equally important. The Japanese make a big deal of seasonal foods and eating foods of the season. But also, I think for such a small country, the regional differences are significant, and people really point them out to you. Part of it may be a marketing ploy currently, trying to sell local products. But certainly, as you travel around Japan, the same dish will be interpreted differently through that local filter of what's available. And so typically, many of these gotochi don, the donburi of that region, tend to feature foods that are of that region. And probably the most recognizable, here we go in Nagoya again, they have a particular kind of chicken that's particularly delicious, kochin. And so their oyakodon is famous. And particularly there are shops that offer the special Nagoya chicken in the oyakodon, and it really is different. I've never really lived in Nagoya. I've lived in the Kansai for a while, and Tokyo is my major home and has been for decades. But to get from Tokyo to Osaka, you travel through Nagoya, and very often would be stopping along the way and sampling the food. And I do remember that dishes that I would order in either Tokyo or Osaka always tasted different. They were neither Tokyo nor Osaka version. They were their own. And the Nagoya chicken is really special. So oyakodon is really a very special experience in Nagoya. Similarly, Kobe is known for its beef, and so it's not surprising that their yakiniku donburi is famous. Hokkaido for their bukkake, meaning it's just heaped on top. Don has caviar, ikura. It's not cheap, but it is delicious. But one of the silliest when I was doing a little search on the internet for it was from Shiga Prefecture, and they have a very special pork donburi, and it's called Baumkuchen. And the reason it's called Baumkuchen is a cake originally, I think, from Germany, but the Japanese became fascinated with it early on. It's made in layers. It's a round cake, and apparently the pigs love the cake, and that's their diet. and the pork tastes different. So I guess I need to go to Shiga and really try it out. I can't say that I've sampled it before, but There are many different versions of gotochi, what the area of Japan has to offer. And apparently, Shiga has some very special pork.
right, it's like not the hamon iberico, but the hamon baumkuchen.
right.
Yeah, I'm
right.
sure it tastes good. Right. Yeah, and then in Tokyo, just to add some more, right. and Fukagawa don is a rice topped with shellfish caught in Tokyo Bay right. and flavored right. with miso. And I found a kaki don, the oyster donburi, in Matsushima right. in Miyagi. And it's like uh-huh. the unlimited number of good right. regional dishes.
Right.
So, okay, so listeners, just try to travel outside Tokyo or Kyoto right. and then find a regional donburi. You're going to be very happy.
Yes.
Right. All right. So let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss how to make donburi at home. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Ball Factory, a Japanese eatery and coffee shop at 95 Montrose Avenue in East Williamsburg. Brooklyn Ball Factory uses the best ingredients to make Japanese comfort food, like their bento boxes featuring meatballs, grilled veggies, Japanese fried chicken, or pork shabu shabu. Plus, visit Brooklyn Ball Factory's sister restaurants, Momo Sushi Shack, Samurai Papa, Samurai Mama, Bozu, and Kitade Shokudo. Learn more at brooklynballfactory.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese broadcasting live from the studio. It's not. I'm sorry, my mouth remembers. I don't. So broadcasting live from my apartment in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And my guest today is Elizabeth Ando, a food writer and cookbook author and Japanese cooking instructor based in Tokyo. So I heard that the donburi drew some attention of the American media a while ago. So maybe you can tell us about the history of donburi in the States.
Okay. Again, from a website from Matsunoya, they claim that they were the first to really open a chain operation in America. And the year that they give is 1966. That's just about the time that I came to Japan, so I can't say that I was aware of their existence in America at the time. But interestingly, when I did the search on the web, my name came up, and I was rather surprised. I had written an article for Food and Wine magazine in 1981 when I was talking about soborodon, and apparently it was the first appearance in a magazine in America that talked about donburi. So it was a weird sensation to discover that I was part of the history of the subject.
Okay. Right. Okay. And then, sort of reflecting that versatility of donburi, I mean, that was really like 50 something years ago.
Right.
So there donburi dishes invented outside of Japan. So, and I heard one of them is a Buddha bowl. So yes. What is Buddha bowl?
Well, Martha Stewart is the one who claims gonzo on that one. she had a book called Meatless, published in 2013. And in it, she used that term, Buddha bowl. Whether she really had been influenced by anything related to Buddhist thinking is, I don't know. I've not spoken to her about it, and I can't say for sure. But it is true that Buddhist monks would walk around with a bowl in the community, and have people would put food in it, and that was often what they ate. And the idea that it was a selection of tidbits that would land up into the bowl, I don't know, it was called the Buddha bowl. And that term certainly took hold, and particularly among vegan and vegetarian, the notion that you didn't have to have meat on top of it, that there were various different kinds of grains, not always rice. And as a matter of fact, many of the sort of the big bowls that are popular now in America are not necessarily rice at the bottom. There are other kinds of mixed grains that are being topped with other foods instead.
Mm. Yeah. Right. So basically it's healthy and sounds very cleansing. So the name is Buddha. And right. I think it's Japanese people found it. I saw a couple articles, like right. El Japón or something. Like, I don't know how popular it is in Japan now, but do you see it in Japan too?
Not called the Buddha bowl. At least I haven't seen that expression anywhere. It's interesting. I set aside 1 morning every week to sort of scan certain Japanese language blogs, just to sort of keep aware of what's happening. I can't recall that I've seen that phrase, Buddha bowl, on any of them, not in Japanese, written by Japanese.
Right. It's kind of like I think Japanese people wouldn't do that. Buddhas are too kind right. of, we owe Buddha, so I probably don't. But yeah, I like the idea. It's like healthy and, you know, donburi dishes tend to be homey, comfortable, and not necessarily always the healthiest. So it's a new version. I think it's pushing the envelope right. of donburi.
Possibly.
Right. So how do you make donburi at home? I mean, you can give us an easy recipe.
Sure. As a matter of fact, just before I got on this call with you, I refreshed my website. And if you go to tasteofculture.com and look at the Kitchen Culture blog, it's all about donburi, and it has recipes for making soborodon. It's sort of an updated version from the original that I did for Food and Wine in 1981. In the recipe that I provide, I encourage people, and I have a sort of a collage of images, encourage people to sort of design their own. I think one of the fun parts about donburi is that you can also design the look of it. And it doesn't have to be just a bunch of things thrown on top of rice. You can create your own sort of image. Sometimes it can be geometric. Sometimes it can be sort of clustered. There are even not quite as elaborate as some of the bento boxes that have, pictures drawn on top of them. But you can be very creative with how you want to present the food.
Right. So then what's the basic components of, what are the, soboro, the meaning of soboro, and what are they on the donburi?
Well, soboro is ground meat, and in Japan, the default mode is usually chicken. But in America, it's more likely to be beef, and that was certainly what I had used in 1981 for Food and Wine, was beef. But any kind of ground meat is possible, including the sort of meat substitutes, the soy products that have that same crumbly appearance to it. And usually there's at least three colors and often five colors. So you want something that's yellow, something that's green, something that's red, black and white. And the white is already the rice at the bottom, and the black could possibly be nori or the dark color of the meat that you're going to be cooking. Yellow is often egg, and one of the recipes I've got up on my website is for the equivalent of a sort of umami scrambled eggs. It's making scrambled eggs, but making it with dashi. And green could be any green veggie. It could be string beans, it could be broccoli, it could be peas, even cucumbers, anything that's green. And red could often be little tomatoes. They could be red pepper. It could be red pickled ginger. So it could be very colorful. And you're putting your toppings, different flavors, different colors, and different methods by which the foods are made. So you get really a total balanced meal all in a bowl.
Right. So the whole point, even like that's a summarize, is how flexible donburi can be. And you can put it, make it as vegetarian or vegan or anything, right. And then colorful, fun bowl, or just you're just lazy, you can just put any leftover and then you'll be happy and right. satisfied.
Well, one of the other great things about soburo is that it can be made ahead and frozen. And so it's often my sort of default when I'm busy. Especially when I go to my supermarket, if the ground chicken is on sale, I will buy a lot. I'll make a lot of soburo. I'll freeze it into individual packages. And then when I'm pressed for time, all I have to do is quickly reheat it. And it's the basis of a meal. So it's
okay. What's the website again?
Tasteofculture.com. www.tasteofculture.com. And you'll easily see the tab for kitchen culture. It's in the center of the home page. And the one that's up there now is on donburi. And there are many others that are archived. I have
great.
Dozens
yeah,
and
because
dozens.
In the past episodes, you introduced some good recipes, and then right. some listeners just it's probably it's rotated, so I can't find the recipe. Can you send it to me? So I got requests. So your recipes are very popular.
Good, I'm glad. I don't apologize. I finally updated my website, and so the old links don't work. So starting with January of this year, I backloaded from June of last year onto the Kitchen Culture blog various different subjects and recipes. But ones that were earlier than that probably are going to be dead links. I apologize for that. They weren't
okay.
able to
and maybe they can people can send you an email via website
yes.
to request for
yeah.
it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Great. And this is my last question. The time is pressing.
Right.
So facing the challenges caused by the pandemic,
right.
You started an online group called Tsudoi. So
right.
could you tell us about that?
Well, the word Tsudoi means a gathering, and it is the absolute opposite of social distancing. And in the mandate to social distance, and I am not teaching in person. If you go to my website, you'll see the explanation I have up there as well. I wanted to connect with people, and I wanted people to connect with each other. And the idea was for me to give sort of projects for people to work on together. Then they would post theirs. I welcome more people to the Tsudoi project. Right now, we have about 450 people who are on there. Again, the link to that is on my website. So when you go to the homepage at tasteofculture.com, you'll see the link for Tsudoi project, and you can read about some of the ones that we've been doing. We're into Unit 11, which I just posted earlier this morning. And this particular unit is on tofu, fried tofu. And I give recipes and more than that, encouragement, and try to get people to interact with each other. It is wonderfully global. I mean, I have literally, I think, 47 countries represented in those 400 and some odd members. And it's terrific. And very often people will say, well, you know, I'm having trouble with this, I'm having trouble with that. And if they're in the same region, they might be able to offer other suggestions for either ingredients or techniques. But the whole idea is you don't have to be Japanese and you don't have to be in Japan to be able to benefit from Japan's kitchen wisdom. And wanting to create a forum for that. And although I'm eager to get back to teaching live and real, and I'm eager for this pandemic to be over, as I'm sure everybody else is, I have a feeling that I will continue with Tadoi just because it's such a wonderful forum for people to meet and exchange information.
So is it free? Free to join?
Free, absolutely free.
Wow.
There are rules, and I haven't kicked anybody out. I've sent a note to one or two people, and one of them decided to withdraw. But it's the usual sort of, you know, nothing nasty to say, please, and no commercial messages. But the rules are all there to read as well, and you do have to apply. But as I said, any reasonable and enthusiastic person is more than welcome. Skill level has nothing to do with it. There's people at every possible level of skill, especially in terms of Japanese cookery. So it's an exciting new adventure for me as well.
Right. Well, I think it's a great, this is a great example that positively this sad pandemic changed the world, because we are close and you and I calling in from Japan.
Right.
And which we never tried before, and we found
never.
It was. So.
Never. I mean, it was always a wonderful, another excuse to go visit New York was to be able to be on your show. And I would love to be able to go back to visit. I yearn for the ability to travel again.
Right. But hopefully next one is going to be in the studio again, but yeah.
Would love to think so. Would love to think so. But for now, it's wash your hands, wear your mask, and think of some creative way of connecting to people.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that the group is Tsudoi, T-S-U-D-O-I, and right. That's on your website again.
Yes.
What's the your website?
Tasteofculture.com.
All right. Great. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So late tonight in your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japaneseats@heritageradionetwork.org or at kikukatema.com. And Japanese is always available at heritageradionetwork.org, at iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Amanda Wang, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.